I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Poshnosh Gal, and I am so excited about today's interview. I'm joined by true culinary royalty in the shape of the legendary Alain Roux. As chef patron of the long-standing three Michelin-starred restaurant, the Waterside Inn, Alain has firmly cemented his position in the famous Roux dynasty and is now an icon in his own right. Alain, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
My pleasure. Very well, Shalina.
How was it for you growing up with your father and your uncle being the famous Roux brothers?
It was well-fed. that's one thing. Talks were certainly all raised and around food and wine. And yes, I think it was not only for the healthy part of things, but certainly for the pleasure of life. I think that was the main thing and the beautiful thing of the family is we just love our food.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a child, did you ever dine out at Les Gavroches?
Yes, very early age. I was very lucky to go out in some beautiful restaurants, not many, but a few. And certainly Le Gavroche was the first restaurant I went. I was actually still in my prime when I was left behind the bar, the counter. My mum had to go shopping, and that was my place, behind the counter.
And was it an expectation to become a chef for you, or did you feel free to follow your own path?
No, totally free. I have two sisters who are, one is 4 and the other one is 2 years older. And we just had the freedom of our life and certainly our professional life.
Right. And so, I mean, you decided you wanted to be a chef just at the age of 14.
Yes, I was about 14 years old. It was just a time where school realized I was not meant to be a very good student. And yes, I just didn't like school for the right things. And I just wanted to get into the active life of working and earning a bit of money and learning and doing something I really, really liked.
Yeah, and your father must have been very, very happy about that.
Well, I think he was worried. He was worried before anything. And at the same time, I could see there was some happiness there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you started as an apprentice training as a pastry chef in Paris at just 16.
Yes, that was certainly one of the best thing I did was to start as a pastry chef. Recommended by my father, of course, to start in that school. It's certainly a different school than just being a cook, a chef. Pastry is very meticulous, it's very precise, and you can't like change things the same way as when you cook any savory. You really have to work with measurements, with a scale. The discipline is quite different. And it's a very good school, the way of learning about, you know, learning in depth about ingredients and understanding ingredients and food. And at the same time, it's so artistic. It's a beautiful, beautiful profession, being a pastry chef, not only for the calories, but it's just, you know, finishing a meal or even the afternoon with an afternoon tea or just when you need a bit of comfort in the autumn or winter day, a little pastry, you know, can't harm you. It can only bring you a bit of sunshine and goodness.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so you were at Patisserie Millet. Do you remember much about that place?
I totally remember a lot of things from there because it was the beginning. I didn't spend much time in the kitchen before that, and I was a novice. I had just everything to learn, everything to soak up. And I certainly enjoyed it. I know my peers, my colleagues, and certainly my maître d'apprentissage were, you know, very happy to teach me and to coach me, but they had a hard time, as hard as me, I think. Because yes, that's when you realize that you know nothing. When you're 16 years old, you just know nothing. And I had everything to learn, and I've learned with, you know, some good people, good colleagues. Denis Ruffel was in charge of the pastry shop. He was the best professional I've actually met, and certainly he was so patient. I think to start off, he was the best teacher I could wish for. And I've learned with my mistakes as well.
Yeah, as you do. And I mean, it's been the training ground of so many amazing chefs over the years. And both your father and Denis Ruffel at the Patisserie have been awarded Milieu Ouvrier de France.
Yes.
Sorry, apologies for my bad pronunciation.
That's perfect French. Yes, it's certainly in the profession, it's the highest accolade. You have that in all different craft, and certainly pastry is one of them. Cooking in the kitchen is another one. And yeah, my father was recognized as being, you know, one of those very special, talented pastry chef. But in the family, I just followed, you know, the guidance. And my uncle, who's the oldest in the family, is actually his birthday today, and would you believe it, he's 85 years old.
Oh,
so wow. I wish him a happy birthday.
Oh, I wish him a happy birthday also.
I wish I could cook for his birthday meal, but I know he's in good hands, he's well looked after. So my uncle started as a pastry chef in the business, and my father just followed, did the same thing. My cousin, who's a few years older than me, obviously was told that was the best way of starting, the best school, and he did that. He started a classic pastry apprenticeship in Paris as well, in a different place, and I just did the same, really. So a lot of influence in the family, I think.
Absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned earlier on that you actually, you know, you didn't know anything when you went to the Patisserie Millet. And so did you spend time when you were very, very young with your father? Was he teaching you in the kitchen? Did you spend any time with him learning?
A little bit, but not that much. You always learn just by watching. And I think I did more looking around and watching, and just being in the corner of the kitchen, looking at the team and the chef and my father running the brigade and running the service, or otherwise even during the preparation. It was just amazing to see all those beautiful raw ingredients and the way they were prepared and being cooked. And cooking à la minute is something when you have a team of, you know, 15, I think they must have been not more than 15 or 18 chefs at that time in my father's kitchen. But it was amazing the buzz and the feeling you could get just by looking. And you can't beat by, you know, watching chefs cooking, especially live. You can't beat that. And I loved it being a kid. So I can't say my father had much time to look after me, particularly just myself. He did the odd thing, but I think I had to wait to start really having hands-on, and the best was really to learn elsewhere than at home.
Right, understood. And so after Patisserie Millet, you spent the next 8 years at Relais and Chateau restaurants in France, including Côte de Jacques in Joigny.
Yes, so I mean, the first restaurant I started to work was Restaurant Pic in Valence.
Yeah.
which is got a legacy. That family has been running their restaurant for must be 70 plus years. It's the fourth generation, if I'm right. Now is the daughter is running the show, Anne-Sophie Pic, which is certainly a world famous chef now.
Yes.
At the time I was working there, it was again, I would say, the first kitchen I stepped in to work as a young cook. So very impressive. You can imagine, you know, when you're 18, 19 years old, you get into a free Michelin star kitchen. And that brigade, there were about 35, 40 chefs. It was just amazing. We used to cook for between 2 to 250 covers per service. It was amazing. A lovely family business with a father and son, Jacques and Alain Pic. It was an eye-opener and beautiful ingredients, because in that part of the country in France, it's got lovely produce and lovely wine as well. It's on the Rhône Valley, so very nice.
And do you think that was a strategy of your father to send you to a family-run business so that, you know, eventually then you would also learn how it works?
It was the hard school. He was quite pleased by my choice, definitely. Not only because it was a family-run business, I could get a glimpse of what to expect one day. Mm-hmm. And it certainly was a classical food they used to prepare, and a beautiful food, really taste before anything else. And at that time, that was it anyway. Three Michelin star in France was all about taste. Mm-hmm. And it was a very good school, but he was worried. He was worried, and he knew I was at a hard school, a good school, starting there as a chef. But he got worried because the first day I arrived there, I always will remember Jacques Pic, the father. I stepped in the kitchen with my beautiful whites as a young kid, and I will always remember he was waiting for me with a little tray with a couple of viennoiseries just baked, a mug of coffee, and he greeted me and poured the coffee for me. I was like so embarrassed. I mean, everybody came in more or less at the same time, all the chefs, and went to their stations, started to work, and I was there having my coffee with the main man. served my little coffee. It's almost like he stirred my coffee. I was so embarrassed, but a beautiful touch. But I have to say, day number two, I did ask him to not have my coffee served, that I was going to have it with the rest of the team. and that's how it went on. But I think just to another perspective and something that made me laugh, but way, way back, I was already working with my father that time for a few years, and I've been told, and I realized what happened in those days. My father called Jacques Pic and said to him, make sure my son is there to learn and work and sweat hard. He's not here for anything else.
Yeah.
So one thing, is not here for the money. So make sure you're paying half of the rest of your team. So I never realized that, in fact, I was paid a very, very, very low salary. No wonder I was struggling. I was struggling to pay my rent. So that makes me laugh. But when I knew that the first time, and that was not many years ago, it was way after I left that place, I couldn't believe what my father's done.
And did you ever contest it with him?
I tried, and I thought, well, at the end of the day, I'm not surprised. He's like that. He was like that. He's always been a tough chef, a tough cookie. Work before anything else. And yeah, I guess that was the way, you know, if you wanted to start and do a good school and learn the proper way,
yeah,
that's part of life. And that's part of our business. We need to really learn and understand, and earlier is best, that we don't work for money. Everybody needs money, and certainly to open a business, you need money, and to run a business, you need money, but we don't work for money in this industry. And yeah, I think my dad wanted me to understand that at an early stage.
Yeah, sounds like a good lesson.
Yes, but quite a surprise when I knew about that.
So taking you back when you were in France, I mean, you also served in the military service as a chef, including working at Élysée Palace. Did you meet Françoise Mitterrand?
Yes, I mean, I did at that time. You had to do the military service, so I did my months or a couple of months call, being the real soldier and learning how to clean a gun and use a gun and do basically camping, but you know, camping with a gun, which is no fun, and marching at night and singing all the military songs. And I was in Champagne, and I was so glad to be there, but it was that's when I actually knew a bit more about Champagne in August and September. Nights are so cold over there. And running at 4 or 5 in the morning, it's not the best, really. So when I drink Champagne, I always think of my classes when I was a military student. So lucky enough, that was only for a month or two. And after, I moved back to being a cook and doing my military year as a young cook in the Élysée Palace. So yes, François Mitterrand was the president at that time. Mm-hmm. And not only in the palace, there was the main kitchen, but in his wing of the palace, he had a small private kitchen. And he had one private chef and one young military cook. And I was designated to be that young person. So I was basically cooking everything, breakfast, lunch, dinner, or afternoon teas, or whatever, any time of the day, night. I used to look after the president, the first lady, and his close family, his relatives, and obviously private meetings, a lot of high-ranked people from different state of, you know, countries and right. From all across different continents. So it was very interesting, not only for the food, but as a perspective of a human being, a young man, yes. So very interesting, yes. And not only that, but I used to go back into the big kitchen where we used to cook for banquetings, for very large receptions, and I cooked for, well, I was not in charge, I was a young cook, but I partake in preparations and serving royalties from all across the world. And that's only the first time I think I cooked for the British royal family, and
wow.
that was, you know, so impressive. I could only see them from a window, behind a window, that as close as I could go.
So you never met any of the members?
A few from the British royal family. I prefer not to say.
Okay.
And some others, and it's true that I was very privileged to be at in the private wing of the president, and that was even more special. So a lot of things are confidential in that matter.
Okay, understood. And so, I mean, I read somewhere that you like the Dome restaurant in Paris when you were a young man. So you must be a real lover of seafood.
Yes. Unfortunately, seafood, I love seafood, but there's one thing I can't eat since only a few years because I can't eat oysters anymore.
Oh, okay.
I've eaten a bad oyster, not here at the waterside.
I wasn't going to ask you that. Glad you clarified.
I can't say where, but unfortunately, it's one of those things I can't eat them anymore. I'm allergic to them,
That's just
so it's really a shame because I used to love eating oysters, not many, but a few. I used to love that, and they can be so different. But yeah, I love classic French food and shellfish, fish. Yeah, I just love it.
Yeah, and I mean, I started eating oysters only after the age of, I think, 30, and now I can't get enough of them. I really enjoy oysters so much.
Well, in France, it's certainly one of the things you eat at Christmas time is oysters. It's on the menu. In every household, it's oysters. Yeah, it's a must. So it's one of those very celebration theme ingredients. It's oysters.
After working at several more French restaurants, including, you know, as you mentioned, the three Michelin starred Maison Peak, you moved
Yes.
to Bray to work with your father at the Waterside Inn. What was it like actually in that work dynamic finally with your father?
Quite a shock, actually, because it's true during the 8 years in restaurants in France, some were 3 stars like Peak, La Côte Saint-Jacques. I worked in some 2-star, 1-star Michelin as well. Most of them were all run by a family business. So it was an eye-opener. And saying that, I was not quite ready to work with and for my father.
Okay.
It was that's when we realized that, yes, I'm glad we said we're going to try for a summer job and we'll see.
Okay.
Yes, because we didn't really have any relationship as such as father and son, because my dad's always been focused on his work. Because it takes time to build a reputation, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to achieve something in his career, and certainly as a chef or a restaurateur, it's more than time, it's a life. And that was his life. And unfortunately, my parents divorced when I was 10. So I moved to France when I was 10 years old. So for about, all those years, I couldn't really see my father that much. Maybe once, twice, 3 times a year when I was a student still in France. But when I started to work, was maybe worse. I could see him for a short glimpse once a year. So we didn't really know each other much, I think. As a father and son, or we had very little, relationship before that, so it didn't help. And working, well, we never worked really together. And he's certainly a hard teacher, where he's hard with all his, he was hard with all his employee, and he was certainly maybe a bit harder with his son. So I could see it, I could feel it, but I was expecting that. I was expecting that, and it took a good 2 to 3 years, I think, to realize and understand each other on both sides. I think on this side, as well as my side, we had a hard time for 2 or 3 years, and after that, there was a big change, and we realized that we could do a long journey together. And yeah, we did 29 years. So I miss him to bits. And he's certainly been in my career. He's been my best teacher. And he suddenly catch up the father I didn't have in the early days. We catch up, we had great moments. So
I could talk
about him and certain things I've seen or done with him, or I partake with him. I've got so many lovely memories. So,
and I mean, if it's okay with you, we'd love to hear what is your fondest memory that you can share with us.
Yeah, the most hilarious moments with my father. I've got so many, to be honest, because Dad, you know, was a hard man, hard chef in the kitchen as well. But he had time for fun. You know, it's like always work hard, play hard. And one of them was we used to run a cookery school and we did the cookery class together. And we were doing a watercress soup. And he basically, we done the soup, cooked the soup, and we had to blintz it in a tall hand blender. And I wanted to help him, and he got, I don't know, one of those moments where Dad went, I'll do it, let me do it. I said, fine. But he put the machine on, but he forgot to put the lid on top. I mean, we had six people following the cookery class and cooking along, helping out. And it was a quite a small kitchen, small environment. And what happened is basically not only the ceiling was just redecorated, was all green, but all of us were green. But my dad was covered of hot soup.
Oh, wow. So
it was quite hot, the soup, actually, which was quite nice, because once he obviously had a little shower, he was nicely tanned.
Well, that's definitely a good lesson for everybody.
That made me laugh. Yeah. That made everybody laugh, lucky enough, because it did stain a few clothes. But but Dad finally laughed as well. That was, I think, great. It was one of those good moments, funny moments. You know, mistakes should always be looked at in a different way at some point. That was one mistake. Otherwise, we did a few trips because my dad used to always love to do the primeur in Bordeaux. And he used to run his wine little business, and he used to buy a lot of good Bordeaux wine as a primeur. And I joined him a few times for the trip. So obviously, focused on tasting. And you can just imagine, you know, I'm not used to tasting wine such as the primeur, which is, I don't know, you basically taste an average of at least 200-300 different wines.
Wow.
That's in one day.
Wow.
I'm not used to it, and even if it's like young, just made wine, which you're not meant to drink, most of it is so good. I was drinking it. So I ended up, you know, with a red nose, and I was always very happy during the day. my dad very much used to that, but obviously we used to taste in different places a lot of different wines from the region, from the primeur, but he used to take me, because he used to organize that very precisely, because we had only 4 days, 5 days maximum. So we used to visit the best chateau and not only have a lovely light lunch with the owners or the people who used to make the wine there, but we used to obviously do some beautiful tastings. And impossible to spit the wine when it's like that. Sorry to say, but that's normally what you do. You taste the wine and you spit it. But my dad obviously was over the limit, and we had to drive. So we had to rent a car. We were driving along from one place to another. So we had to do a few miles every day. And one day, he parked the car in the car park of one of the chateaux. And I don't think he found the brake.
Oh, no.
So he went onto a bollard. We didn't kind of realize really what was happening. But when we left, he was driving. He reversed, but half of the front of the car just stayed there.
Oh, my goodness.
And we ended up trying to ask for help. And you can imagine, both of us, we were with the sellotape, with the publicity sellotape of the name of the chateau on the big, large sellotape. We basically sellotaped the car back.
Oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. And
That was on, I think, day one or day two. So for about two or three days, we had to drive with that car. And when we brought the rented car to the airport, you can imagine the face.
Yeah, their car sellotaped.
But we were very well sponsored. I think it was like Lean Bage Chateau. So it was a very good sponsor to have that all sellotaped around the car, especially the front part. But
oh, wow. Yes.
So those are fun and crazy moments.
But, yes, absolutely.
That was like that. It was full of beans, yeah.
So, I mean, it was 10 years. I mean, when you started working with your dad, it was 10 years until you took the role of chef patron. Did you finally get a pay rise? Let me ask you that first.
Yeah, because I started after my 8 years in restaurants, 2 years in pastry. So I had about 10 years trade, you know. But nevertheless, when I came at the waterside, I was demi chef de partie, which is not a commis, but it's a little bit higher in rent. And in those 10 years, I basically climbed the ladder to being a chef de partie, and after that, a sous chef and premier sous chef. And yes, eventually in 2000, 2001, I think I got promoted. Dad was confident to, you know, put me on the board and put me in charge of being, you know, chef patron. That's a time where, as well, our long-standing head chef, Mark Dodson, who worked with my father, and I was lucky enough to work with him for 10 years. As head chef, Mark did 18 years, I think, at the waterside.
Wow.
So it was a time where, yes, I think my father felt confident, and the departure of Chef Mark, I think was a bit of time where he felt he was happy to step back from the kitchen, mm-hmm. and look at things a different way. So after those 10 years where we did work side by side in the kitchen every day, we basically worked differently. I was working very closely with Russell Holborn, who stayed a few years as being my head chef. And after that, Fabrice Urin, who's actually still here, and now he's now the longest head chef of the Waterside Inn. He's just over 19 years now he's been with us. So, yeah. So that's, I think, kind of history, if I'm right.
Yeah, and tell me about, you know, how did you feel the pressure to achieve perfection?
You never get perfection. You just try your best, especially when you've got, you know, to follow in somebody's footstep like that. I mean, my dad is my dad. It's not only the whole team, it's the customer's side of things. It's the press, it's the critics. It's, not easy. I unfortunately, you know, like everything and everybody, you can't please everybody. That's something in our trade, which is certainly one of our biggest challenge. But you certainly realize very early that you can't, it's impossible. And some people have seen the change and were, you know, upset with the change. I have to say, lucky for me, not many, but we, you know, you have to live with your time, and it had to happen. It had to happen where I am different. I bought different things to the work process of the kitchen, even front of house. And so I think, yeah, it's been a few years where I suddenly bought some signature dishes of my own and my head chef, but I've kept, and I certainly will always respect those beautiful dishes my father's been doing in you know, for 40 years, he's been, you know, yes, I think he worked from day one. He opened in 1972, so yeah, he's done many years, over 45 years plus, so I will always keep some of his dishes on the menu.
And I mean, you mentioned, you know, you're always trying to do your best. I mean, and your best is actually pretty amazing, because you've had three Michelin stars for 35 years now in the Waterside Inn. And that's an amazing accomplishment. How does it feel?
I think years actually is more than 35, because it was given in the guide of 1985. So that means it's for the year of 84. So, I mean, well, I stopped counting, to be honest. So I'm not sure if it's something more than 35 years, but it was before my time at the end of the day. So not much to do with me.
But you've continued with it.
I've continued. I'm trying my best, and certainly that's one of the biggest challenges, to keep the standard of what you achieve in your life. Yeah. And it's a big chunk of it, yes, but it's not my stars. It's never been my father's stars either. It's a team. You know, you're nothing without a team. Running a restaurant is a teamwork. Not only in the kitchen, there's many chefs, everybody does his job and everybody's important. But again, front of house is so important, as important as what comes out from the kitchen. So, you know, it's certainly a big reward. It's something we respect highly, and we're very happy and proud, but we don't stick to that. One day, you know, because we all know in life things come and go, those stars will go, hopefully not more than one at a time. But until I'm here and I do what I love to do, and I can do it with a great team, because yeah, they deserve the awards, I will continue, and we will do things the same or the best we can, always to look at progressing, to achieve, you know, something better for us, for the team, for the business, but certainly for our guest. And yeah, the stars, certainly, you know, we don't only think of those stars. And that is to tell you, yes, I can't even remember how many exactly years. It's over 35 years. So, but it was before my time.
So, I mean, speaking of, you know, amazing staff, you know, Frederic Poulet has big shoes to fill as GM following Diego Masquiaga, who was actually with you for, well, it was 35 years or?
Well, Diego's worked 30 years at the Waterside. He had a gap year, but soon realized that he was missing home. And he worked prior to that at Le Gavroche, not as a restaurant manager, but he worked at Le Gavroche and other restaurants that were run by the family, meaning for my uncle and father at that time. So he's had so many years working for the family and so many years working at the Waterside Inn. I mean, Diego was, you know, and still is an icon in the industry. And what he's done and what he's developed in a way of service is, you know, impressive, is remarkable. And this is, I think, the best example of what the family, what we do. Because in the family, we are chefs, we are cook. But what we do is we run a restaurant. And what is a restaurant? I think some people and some chefs maybe forget that. Is that it's because it's all good to have a chef bringing food in the restaurant, but you know there's ways of doing it, and I personally think there's nobody better than the head waiter. And you know, a restaurant is all about food service. Of course, if you have a location, something quite idyllic and special, and here we're very lucky with the River Thames and having such a beautiful view with open windows when it's a nice warm day, it becomes unique. It becomes a place where it's worth traveling. But the service, you know, can lift the food. And someone like Diego or someone like Frédéric, that's what they do. You know, those people, and I think every top class restaurant have got people like that. They've got the maître d', the restaurant manager, who's capable to pamper the guest and to serve anything to the guest that will please him. And I think certainly Diego has been the best example at Waterside because he's been the longest restaurant manager working here. And we haven't had many. We had, Pierre Kaufmann was working here. His wife Annie used to be in charge of front of house.
Oh wow!
And that was in 1972. And after that, we had Christian Germain with his wife Lindsay. She was working front of house, and she had the responsibility front of house. And we had Olivier Ferréjean, which was one of the, you know, highly respected restaurant manager. He worked at the Waterside the years where the restaurant achieved the 2 to 3 Michelin star. And he's now moved to Australia. He's, you know, I think people like that, they've brought the service to a different level. And I think as a professional, that's when you realize that it's all good to have a chef bringing food in the restaurant, but a restaurant manager or a waiter has got the style. You know, it's a different job, to be honest.
Yes.
It can work in some restaurants, but I think we have to be sensible, you know, not too much, you know. Chefs should be in the kitchen. If they come outside, for a few minutes or for special, you know, carvings maybe, but otherwise, you know, a good maître d' or a good restaurant manager, they should be skilled with a fork and a knife.
And I feel very privileged now that you say that, because you popped out and said hello when I was dining there as well. So thank you so much for coming and saying hello.
It was a pleasure to meet you, because I've heard that obviously you've been working and interviewing so many special chefs. And on top of that, on that day, there was a lot of washing up. So it was good for me to escape the kitchen.
Good reason to leave.
Yes.
So are you in the kitchen every day?
Every day, I certainly walk through the kitchen. Unfortunately, I don't spend the time I used to spend.
Okay.
And that's maybe, well, I can't say it's a regret. It's just that I've realized that a few years ago, but it's certainly one of the biggest shock I had in my career, was having to step out of the kitchen the way you have to. Running a restaurant, unfortunately, if we want to run a restaurant like the Waterside Inn, with such a big team, with such a big premises, and the way we work, I've got so many things to look after and to do that I can't be everywhere, and I can't be in the kitchen like I used to be full time. So I've got a team which, to be honest, I can trust, and we've worked long enough, especially my key man, which is Fabrice. He's my right hand and left hand, to be honest. We know what we like. We work together, obviously differently, but I can't say I'm in the kitchen all the time. No, that would be lying, and I don't need to. I need to do other things, and running a restaurant with rooms, that's what you have to do, unfortunately, because I was quite happy to stay backstage in a nice warm kitchen, especially in the autumn or English winter months, the best place on earth. But no, I'm happy as well to meet customers and to look after helping and seeing how front of house works, and looking after our beautiful bedrooms, our accommodation. And since a few years, I've got a young wife. She took over and is helping with a lot of the beautiful things in the place. So she's already redecorated some of the bedrooms. So we're trying again, if and when we can, we just like to continue that legacy of running a family business.
I mean, speaking of doing other things, you also recently opened Ruit Skindles in Maidenhead. It's a brasserie, correct?
It's a brasserie, not a typical Parisian brasserie. It's a little bit more modern, if I may, especially with the decor and the style. But the food, yes, the food is pretty much a big influence of French classics, done up the Rue style, or certainly my father and my style, because it's been, we opened just about 3 years,
yeah.
give or take a few weeks. It's going to be 3 years, and I'm glad we did that with my dad. It was our first project that we did together from scratch, and we both love simple food, brasserie food, and it's the opportunity came up. It's just upstream from the river, 10 minutes by boat. Mm-hmm. And it's, a beautiful location. And what we offer over there, we have a team which we just leave them in charge. And I kind of supervise and make sure the menu is done the way it should be done, and dishes as well. And service is very simple. It's friendly, but made in a style where you basically don't need to go out and visit the brasserie for a special occasion. If you're hungry, you can go there and just have one course, and that's fine. Nobody will tell you off. You won't pay a surcharge. You can just have a bowl of soup and a glass of wine, and it's fine.
It sounds great. And you also, you mentioned you've got a great team there. Your head chef, Raj Kumar, is Mauritian. And, he worked with Alain Ducasse, Daniel Boulud, and at the Ritz, at the Ritz as well. So yes. How did you meet him?
Well, he worked at Le Gavroche as well.
Ah, okay.
With my cousin. So he's been in the best schools, to be honest. As you said, he worked in all those places, but where I've met him was from Le Gavroche. And after, he wanted to come and work at the Waterside, and he worked for quite a few years here, climbed the ladder, and up to a point where he became my first sous chef. So very talented young chef, very, yeah. And a lovely person as well. And what is nice is that, you know, being from Mauritius, when he cooks, not everything, but when he cooks for himself or for the team or for me, he occasionally will do some Mauritius style dishes. And I love those flavors. I love those delicious, fresh, you know, flavors. And sometimes association of fruits, which is something we love in our food, in our cooking, in the family. We love savory and adding fruits in our food, yeah.
And so going back to Skindles, I mean, in the 80s, it was voted the best nightclub in the world, and even the Rolling Stones played there. Any plans to open another nightclub?
it was suddenly renowned because I think my dad was on the dance floor as well at that time. In those years. And not only there was a lovely bar, but there used to be a dance floor, and there were years where there were swimming pools, underground swimming pools, which I never knew. I was never allowed there because at that time I was too young. And apparently people used to go naked to swim in those swimming pools.
Wow.
So yeah, my dad told me only a few years ago.
And you were wishing you were a little bit older.
I wish, yeah. Mind you, no. Maybe not, actually. I don't think I would have felt a very happy going swimming naked. I feel embarrassed, I think. But no, it had certainly days of where it was the place to go. And the history of Skindles is way back from quite a few hundred years ago. It's had everything from the best hotel to the table, lovely food, to a place to go for afternoon tea. We've had the history there is incredible.
And so the guests as well, King Edward VII, the Marx Brothers, the King of Jordan, Princess Margaret, and John Lennon.
And Churchill as well. So, I mean, the history is incredible. And to know that the place was closed for 25 years, it was just left closed. The opportunity, you know, when we were offered the chance of, you know, taking over, we just couldn't refuse, because we could just see the best place, the best location for opening a brasserie was to take over and keep the name Skindles, because for us, you know, especially my father, it was good memories. Oh, yeah,
amazing memories. And I mean, the Waterside Inn has also been blessed equally with celebrities. Who has been your favorite guest?
We've had many, that's for sure, and some that we might have not recognized as well. I think you can't beat, you know, the royal family. I've been lucky enough to cook for many, high-end people. And just the names would make you shake. The thing with the royal family is they are very approachable when they come here. I just get, even if it's a minute or 2 minutes, to be able to have a short conversation, or the feedback you get from the family, it's just they are so well, not only behaved, they just know everything about life, and they can talk with everybody. They're down to earth, really. They just love quality, but simplicity. And when they can get a chance to have a few minutes of privacy,
yeah,
I think they have it. And they to see that they're comfortable to have it here at the waterside inn, not only in our private dining room, but in the main dining room of the restaurant, which I think the last time Her Majesty came was quite incredible, actually, to sit in the main restaurant, because when I went to around the restaurant to see all our guests dining everywhere. Well, I'm not lying, but two-thirds of the dining room did not see that she was there.
Wow. I would have thought that it would have just been her and the family without any other guests, but...
No. It's not often, but occasionally, you know, they like everybody. We're all human beings and we like to appreciate things like everyone. Yeah. And it's you know, here people should all feel like king and queens. And that's what we like to do, especially front of house. They have the skills. They have the skills to make you feel like you're a regular, feel like you're the most important person in the world, even if it's a once in a lifetime visit. No, it's important, and this is what we like. We like to respect all our guests, and even if they only come to be fed and fed well. But it's even nicer when you see the royal family coming here for special occasion.
Absolutely. And phenomenal. I mean, I can't believe no one recognized her.
Yeah, I guess clients are in their little world and
enjoying the food.
They enjoy the food, they enjoy their company, and they don't always look at other guests and around the room. They maybe look at the river, and yeah, a lot of people I know did not spot her, which is good. That's what she wants anyway.
Yes, of course.
She likes to be treated like everybody.
And what is the funniest moment in the history of the restaurant that you can remember?
The funniest. I think once was, I sent a whole duck to be carved in the restaurant. And I was following the carving because we have a little camera to follow the speed of the carving. And I had to follow it by sending the sauce and sending the legs that we serve as a second service of the duck. And suddenly the maitre d' was carving the duck. Suddenly the couple that were looking at the duck being carved, the gentleman, I saw him disappearing. And I thought, well, he can't have slipped like that from being sitting normally on the banquette, side by side with his partner, a young lady. He just went down the table. I said, what's happened to him? He's something, you know. So I kind of put my head around the corner. And in fact, the maitre d' was scared and thought something happened to him. He collapsed or something like that. But in fact, the young man was hiding, because I think someone stepped in the dining room, which he obviously knew he was not meant to be there and did not want to be seen.
Oh my gosh.
So the next thing is the maitre d', very professional, said to the guest, stay on the day, I'm going to deal and finish to carve the duck. So he finished to carve the duck, plated the duck, and with the help of the guéridon, helped the customer who was walking on his knees and four hands, and just escaped outside, and the lady followed normally. And we had to, because they were staying overnight, so we had to do a room service for the duck, basically. And I think when I think of that, that was quite a funny story.
That is a very funny story. You helped with the cover up.
Yes, it was a very naughty cover-up.
So, Ala, you spent most of your time actually giving back into the industry with the Roos Scholarship as well, which nurtures and creates fantastic opportunities for young chefs. Tell us more about it and what is your main role in it?
The Roos Scholarship is, I think, unique. I've been invited because I've heard since my uncle and father started that in 1984. I was following away from it, but I could see what it was, and I was very impressed. And in 1999, my dad invited me and my cousin and my uncle, they invited us to join the panel of judges. So for all the years, we were judging the competition. And since a few years with my cousin, maybe 5 years, we've been taking over and being in charge, and we're basically, you know, we run the scholarship as both as chairmans. What it's all about is incredible, because the years from when my uncle and dad started that, the reason were really was to be able to give an opportunity to every young British chef or young chef that started his career in Great Britain to be able to work everywhere he wanted in the world. And by doing that was having a stage in a three Michelin star restaurant. That was the key, basically. And at that time, British cooks were not, you know, looked at, or and any British chef used to send a CV, that the CV was in the bin. Wherever they used to send the CV, not only in Europe, but other areas around the world, but in France, forget about it, you know. British people could not cook. That was the image of French people. Things have changed, which is brilliant. But the scholarship, I think, really has helped and have certainly has improved and opened the doors. And it's been a life-changing for each scholar. Every year there's been a scholar, a winner, and it's been a life-changing for them, a career-changing for them. And some are these days, you know, running the best restaurants in the country, their own restaurants, and have got several stars on their shoulders. And some are even across the world, Australia, Japan, everywhere in the States. It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is an incredible thing for...
It's a possibility of sharing your time, your knowledge, your passion. And we know it. With my cousin, we were very fortunate, mainly because of our fathers. And it's a bit of a must. We have to do the same. You know, we can't just stop and keep everything for ourselves. And I think that's any chef, especially these days, people do realize that as being a chef, that you have to share and put your knowledge, you know, to others, because we learn with young people as well. Before, in the old days, even when I started, I remember those ages, you could not take a photo in the kitchen, you could not take a recipe away. It was all secret. Everything was a secret. So to learn, it was very difficult. To teach people, it was made in a different way. Now, I think things are a lot more open, a lot more transparent. And at the end of the day, there are so many possibilities with the technology as well. It's so easy to progress and make something better these days. Why not give the chance to the young generation? And I think the scholarship does do that. It helps. The support the family gives, with the help of the panel of judges, because they are very much implemented in that, which is great. And all the scholars, they've built a network, because having over 30 scholars, way over 30 scholars now, they build their own network and they communicate and they bond and they help each other in anything. Even if they don't run their own business, even if they have a position as a head chef or executive chef in a place, they always need advice and help, and they help each other. And they always communicate with the family and all the other judges, included Claire Smith, James Martin, and several other chefs like Angela Hartnett. You can see on our website that it's, I think that the chance just for them to be able to be judged by those chefs and to meet them once in their life, yeah. I think that's maybe a great opportunity. And competing in the competition is a great challenge. It's an eye-opener, and just by doing that, they can learn something.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you're such a huge inspiration for others. What are the things that inspire you, or who?
Everybody inspires me. From my early age, my two grandma, they inspired me because the way they used to grow their things in their garden, or the way they used to do their shopping in the markets, and the way they used to cook and prepare a meal. It was, you know, like going to church almost. It's all about education. And I think that's what I love about this industry, hospitality industry, the catering industry, and being a chef, being a cook, is you never, never stop learning. You always have something new to learn, to do. And you can do things as well that you might know, but you can do them differently. And with the young people, you can share, you can learn from them as well, and you can always improve. There's always space for improvement in our job. Inspiration comes from, as well, ingredients. There's always something different with ingredients to discover. And the world is getting so small now. I know that the footprint is important, but saying that, you know, you can get things from other continents, from around the globe, which helps to be a bit more innovative, a bit different. And sometimes you don't need much in a dish, but it will lift and bring a different dimension to a food, to a dish.
And who are the chefs that you admire today? Are you allowed to tell me that?
Well, apart from my uncle, my dad, my cousin, my little niece, which is lovely, and she runs her business with her husband.
Yes,
she's obviously stopped cooking and saying that when she immediately opened a beautiful restaurant, she decided to step out of the kitchen with her husband Diego being in charge of the kitchen. Now she's got a first young baby, so.
Yes. I
think she's having a little break. So that's brilliant. The family is getting bigger. She's a very good cook as well. Very. I love her food, and her husband is cooking beautifully well as well. It's difficult. I mean, of course, you have people who can influence any cook, like Paul Bocuse. You know, who hasn't learned from Paul Bocuse? Or even, you know, somebody a lot younger, like Claire Smith. She's one of my favorite chefs. I love her food, her cooking, yeah. And what she's opened and set up as her own restaurant. It's got a fingerprint. It's a beautiful restaurant. For me, it's one of my favorites. Saying that, I think if every chef, or if you go out at the end of the day, nothing is perfect. We all have different tastes, and I think it's normal. We all have a different palate as well. So, you know, but saying that, Claire Smith, she's almost perfect. but you have something good in every chef. And I hope I try to bring that myself. And I hope we can bring that and continue to bring that at the Waterside Inn. But no head chef is perfect. But you know, even if you look at Marco Pierre White, he is in the British generation, is certainly one of the best cooks we've seen. But you know, you look at Sat Baines, he's brilliant, or Mark Bishaw. Again, you know, now this is the elite of British, you know, kitchen. That's the places where you have to go and eat. And there's so many across the country. We're spoiled now, we're spoiled.
And do you get the opportunity to dine out much in other restaurants?
I try, I don't go much because it's time consuming. Yeah. Busy work, busy restaurant, so I can't complain. Still a young family, so I do try to get a bit of time for the family. But and again, at the same time, if I go out, I like to be spoiled. So you can't get spoiled too often. And that's why I like to go out, but you know, now and again, not every week.
No. And you mentioned your young family. Are your children, do they have an interest in cooking yet? Any signs?
Well, they've got interest, yeah. They see it as fun. We do play, and certainly with my wife, they do bake a fair bit at home. Yeah. So we'll see. They're too young. My son is only 10 years old. My daughter is going to be 7 beginning of next year. So yeah, there's quite a few more years to go. We'll see. Yeah.
And if one of them says that they want to be a chef, will you put them through the same training? Will you send them to France?
If they want to, I'll see what they want to do. It's true that I think the idea of going to learn somewhere else before going back home or going back to the family is a good move. Because after, it's a bit difficult to do the other way around, to escape once you've started in the family business. So yeah, I would certainly maybe recommend that, but I will see. They will do whatever they want. I might have retired by then. We'll see. I'll try to hang on.
Please do, because it would be great to see you again. So we're almost at the end. I have one last question for you. Tell me something about yourself that I could not possibly know.
Wow. Well, you mostly don't know that I've got an orchid at home.
You have an orchid?
Yes. Because that's, I mean, it's maybe not great, but I think it's great. I just love gardening. I haven't got time to do much, but I certainly obviously love growing vegetables, but I haven't got any space or time for that. But I've got fruits. I've got fruit trees. I've got about over 35 trees in my small garden.
Wow.
Mainly apple and pears, some varieties which are quite common in the country, some a bit more from the past, and the odd fruit trees like well, cherries, of course, different plums, the golden plums, the damsons. I've got different fig trees. What else? Walnuts, hazelnuts.
Wow, that sounds absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I just love looking after those trees. Yeah. They're still young, but they're starting to produce. I've got a few vine trees, not many, a few table grapes, which come from my dad's estate, because he's got he had a few vine to make wine and table grapes as well in south of France. So I bought a few wood sticks of vines and planted those, and they all picked up and shoot off big time. And then now I'm eating the grapes from my garden. I just love looking after trees and seeing the crop every year. Sometimes it's better than others, but it's the nature. I find it very rewarding and relaxing, from nurturing the trees to trimming the trees, and to try to safeguard the fruits from the squirrels or the birds. It's a fight and a fun. It's a fun as well.
And you're right. It's not easy to do it. Whenever I've had orchids, they struggle to survive with me. I'm terrible at looking after them. My mother's amazing with orchids. She can bring them back to life and they bloom in her home. But I for some reason, they just don't work with me. So yeah, it is hard work. You've got to nurture them a lot.
Green hands. We haven't all got green hands. I'm not the best, but I'm proud of what I can do. Yeah. Or the nature does. Yeah.
Well, Chef Alain, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
It's been wonderful. Guys, if you want to, unfortunately, Chef Alain is not actually on social media, but you can follow Rue Waterside in Bray on Instagram, and I'm at Posh Nosh Gal.